And it's just about 11 o'clock here at KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's the bike show today. Alon and Chris are hosting three guests, and they'll be talking about the joys and challenges of bike riding past age 50. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from City Bikes, a worker-owned, cooperatively run, new and used bicycle sales and service shop with two locations on Southeast Ankeny near KBOO. Open 7 days a week for your bicycle commuting needs and online at citybikes.coop. Also by Hopworks Urban Brewery, committed to creating world-class food and organic beer as sustainably as possible at their carbon-neutral eco brew pubs. Hopworks is located at Southeast 29th and Powell Boulevard, and Hopworks Bike Bar is at North Williams and Shaver, available on draft and in bottles throughout Cascadia. Information at 503-232-HOPS or hopworksbeer.com. Stay tuned for the bike show.
Good morning. Welcome to the KBOO Bike Show. My name is Alon Robb, and I'm joined today by co-host Christopher Delaney, our engineer is Tammy Dean, and by our guests Ann Morrow, Jerry Smith, and S. Brian Wilson. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Cycling is a lifelong journey. One rides at age 3 and at age 92. Among the individuals who inspire me are such youthful souls as the French rider Jeanine Longo, who at age 52 won her nation's time trial title. That was her 58th French National Track and Road Championship title. And Gustav Hakkinson, the flying grandpa, as they called him, who in 1951, at the age of 66, cycled in a race covering the length of Sweden. The organizers refused to allow him to participate, but he ignored them and started the race 1 minute after the other cyclists. The race was run in stages, and while others slept, Hakkinson would keep riding. After 6 days, 14 hours, and 20 minutes, he arrived at the finish line 24 hours before his closest competitor. His last cycling trips were made at the age of 100. And I'd also like to mention my good friend Jack Boas, born in 1943 in a Dutch concentration camp, who at the age of 70 is still riding and causing trouble to the powers that control our world. While riders in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s are not as numerous in Portland as in cities like Amsterdam and Copenhagen, during many rides in our city, one encounters older riders cycling to work, to play, riding leisurely or in competition, setting their sights on a few blocks or on a month-long bike tour. Today, we are happy to have with us Ann Morrow, Jerry Smith, and S. Brian Wilson, who will talk about the joys, challenges, maybe pains of riding past age 50. Ann is the president of the Portland Wheelman Touring Club and the host of the cable TV show Cycology Today, and that's spelled C-Y-C-O-L-O-G-Y. Jerry is also an active member of the Touring Club, and for the past 20 years has joined them on many rides in the Pacific Northwest, as well as riding solo and sometimes with his daughter in Ireland, Cuba, Puerto Rico, Greece, the Czech Republic, France, New Zealand, and correct me if I omitted some continents and lands. And Vietnam veteran, author, and peace activist S. Brian Wilson has journeyed over 70,000 miles using a hand cycle, including during his book tour along the West Coast. And you're welcome to look at his wonderful website, www.brianwilson.com. Before we get to the topic of cycling, maybe each one of you could tell us a little bit about yourself, your background. Maybe start with you, Jerry.
Yes, I'm Jerry Smith, and my background in cycling really got started in about 1992 when I joined the Portland Wheelman Touring Club, of which Anne has been a much more active member and president, as you mentioned. I have enjoyed biking very much with the club. It's a social as well as an exercise thing for me. We love the sociability of going to various spots for coffee and camaraderie. And as a single rider, I find that to be very helpful because I'm a good eater.
And before you started, did you always cycle? Were you a cyclist in your youth? And
I was probably not much of a cyclist prior to 1992, but I did have a bicycle when I was in graduate school at Boston, and I cycled back and forth from the apartment to the school. You bet. So I've been in cycling, but not nearly as much as some people start much earlier in life than I did.
Anne?
Hi, I'm Anne Morrow, and I was president. I'm a past president of Portland Wheelman Touring Club. I was president for 3 years, and I think my timeline is similar to Jerry's in that I joined Portland Wheelman in about 1992, getting into recreational riding with my husband. I was at a point where my children were old enough that they could be left and to their own devices while he and I rode around and enjoyed cycling, and we really got into it. I too cycled as a child. I had a bicycle, and I kind of embarrassingly remember when I was in the ninth grade, this is back in the days when ninth grade was in junior high school, my mother had kind of taken over my Schwinn bicycle, and she would ride past the school at about lunchtime to go to the grocery store with a big old metal basket on the front of this pink and white Schwinn to get groceries. And I was just mortified, and I asked her, please don't ride past the school. You're embarrassing me. Here I was, a hotshot ninth grader, you know. And so, and here now it's all turned around. I'm you know, really active in cycling and things. And so, you know, life changes. So that's just kind of interesting. But yeah, I just really enjoy recreational riding and week-long bicycle rides and riding with friends. Just a really good time and kind of a mini vacation on the weekend from a work week.
I'm Brian Wilson. I have been a serious cyclist since about 1997 as a hand cyclist. I grew up with a bicycle, and I lived in a rural town where I went everywhere on my bicycle. I never needed to have a car my first 15 years of life. But I didn't really become a serious hand cyclist till about 10 years after I lost my legs. And I was not bicycling at the time I lost my legs, but when I lost my legs, I had to figure out a way to get exercise, and I started rowing. And then I discovered hand cycling. I didn't know they existed. And I discovered that in 1997. And so since 1997, I have been hand cycling over 70,000 miles. I average 4,000 to 5,000 miles a year. And it's been very good for my mental health as well as my physical health. And I don't usually cycle with others because I don't find many hand cyclists that I can hand cycle with, and I can't go fast enough with the bicyclists. So I usually just go off on my own, making sure I get hills every day in my process. Unfortunately, in the last few months, my shoulder, I'm 73, so my shoulders, after 70,000 miles, have worn out. And I'm hoping that the VA is going to give me a shoulder replacement this year. They've told me they would, but I'm also now reconsidering getting back into bicycle leg cycling or trike leg cycling so that I can continue. I've got to be active, otherwise not much point hanging around.
That's great. What's your first memory with the bicycle?
My first memory?
Yeah.
My brother I had a brother 9.5 years older than me. I remember when, at some point when I was about 6 maybe, he was turning over his old balloon tired bike to me. He was 16 and I was about 6. And I was really excited that I was gonna have my big brother's bike. This was in a small town, so it wasn't complicated with traffic and so forth. But that's my first memory of a bike, is that my actually getting my brother's, older brother's balloon-tired bike. I did not have a bike at the time. I probably did have a trike. I don't remember, a little boy's trike, but that was my first memory.
Mm-hmm. And for those who don't know, how does a hand cycle work exactly? What is, how is it different than the regular bike?
It's an arm-powered, totally arm-powered. So you're pedaling with your hands on the grips, and usually they're three-wheeled recumbents, although there are occasionally an upright hand cycle. I have had one and I didn't like it, so I went back to a three-wheeled recumbent hand cycle, and I've been in 5 marathons with my hand cycle, and usually I'm at that point with other hand cyclists in the marathon, which is usually in the wheelchair division. And they're all different makes, but they're all three wheels recumbent. And it's all bicycle technology. It's just that you're pedaling with your arms and hands instead of with your legs and feet.
And how do you keep in shape? I mean, do you do any special exercises before you ride? Any stretching, yoga? What's your method for staying so fit?
Well, I don't do anything before the ride. Certainly, it would probably be advisable to stretch or something before a ride, but I don't. But I do kind of do some what I would call cross training. I belong to a gym, and I do strength exercises, kind of focusing on my legs, trying to develop leg muscles so that I can hopefully be a better cyclist. And since cycling doesn't really work your upper body, I try to work my upper body to keep that in shape. I'm a person who's probably, aging medical problem would be osteoporosis. So bicycling, unfortunately, is not of any benefit because you don't put stress on your, any impact on your bones and things. So I like to walk and do that kind of thing. So kind of mix it up that way. And I've recently gotten into yoga, the idea of balance on the bicycle and the more stretching and just the muscles and the ligaments a little more flexible maybe.
I don't do anything in terms of pre-ride exercises. A lot of people recommend that, so I'm not knocking it in any way, but I don't do it. But I do know this, that when you're cycling, it isn't the same muscles that are used when you're walking or running. And so I find it necessary to go to an athletic club of some sort and do the kinds of exercises that put momentum and jarring into your leg muscles, which you don't get when you're biking. So that's my exercise cycle in the sense of how I do it. But I must say that I could do a better job of pre-exercising before rides.
As we're talking about the subject of health, this is Christopher. Are there any special concerns as we age with cycling? Have you noticed something different that you didn't notice when you were younger riding? Has that presented you with any challenges as you got older? Or maybe has it become easier over time?
Well, this is Jerry, and let me just speak to that. I definitely am not the rider that I was when I was 60 years old and got started with this club. But I would say this. I have aged, and the best time for a cyclist is probably when they're 20, 30 years old. So I've slowed down a lot, and I just stop at times and do some kind of looking around at Mother Nature and enjoying the birds and having them hopefully help me get up that next hill. So you bet. I find that age does make a difference.
I'd agree with what Jerry has to say. I personally haven't had any particular maladies arise as I've been aging. But yeah, I've become a slower rider. And I think, as Jerry kind of alluded to, mentally kind of a different perspective about cycling. You know, it's more about the journey and just enjoying it and enjoying the people that you're with, not about how fast can I get there and how far can I go.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, there's probably a handful of our listeners who have never really ridden a bike as an adult. They might be getting older and say, it might be something I'd love to try. And so that perspective really helps inform that. It's not necessarily about the activity per se, just the time you get to spend with others and experiencing the natural world. Brian, did you want to say something about that as well?
Well, no, I just wanted to say again that as a hand cyclist, I was doing pretty well for 15 years. And then when I got to be 72, I noticed my shoulders were beginning to get very sore. And, of course, it's understandable. But now at 73, I'm actually not able to do this motion with the cranking motion with my right arm more than maybe a mile or so before I just have to stop because of the pain. But it's understandable, obviously, with my age and with the use. And that's why I'm considering going to leg cycling, if I can figure that out.
And you mentioned yoga. There are interesting books, pamphlets, and also classes combining yoga and cycling where some of the exercises are actually done while riding a bicycle, which I do not want to try, but it looks exciting for those that are, you know, acrobats and have a background in circus arts. And also what you said about, you know, the mental journey, the appreciation, Jerry, you mentioned the birds. Maybe as I'm getting older, I'm in my early 50s, maybe this is a cliche, and of course you could appreciate life at any moment, and people do, but as you age, I find you do notice things, and you're not so much in a rush. You know, you've done things in life. There's still many journeys and adventures ahead, but there isn't so much to prove. You could really be more in the moment. And again, that doesn't mean that a 5-year-old or 20-year-old does not do that, but that's something that I also find out. So,
go ahead.
Yes, to me, cycling is has become a spiritual experience as well as a physical experience. It made me appreciate the journey. I can only average about 10 miles an hour, and I like going at that speed because I'm actually able to really enjoy everything around me. I'm not ever in a real hurry. Even when I've been in marathons, I've only done it so that I can go 26 miles without a stop sign. I wasn't interested in my speed or my time. So to me, it's a great practice of being in the moment and being on a journey rather than focusing on a destination.
Yeah, maybe we could spend a few minutes talking about why you ride. You know, what's your motivation? What got you into it? What keeps you going when things get tough or, you know, there's 2,000 feet of a hill climb or something like that? You know, what are you thinking in the back of your head to keep you moving?
Well, this is Jerry again, and I would say for me, I really need to be able to go up that hill without worrying about anybody that's behind me or in front of me. I just, all the problems that I started with on my 20-page to-do list seem to kind of drift away when I'm out on the bike. It's therapeutic to a great sense. And there's lots of books and pamphlets on Zen biking, you know, which is the kind of thing where you just let your mind go away from the problems of the day and worry about that next hill and the nature that is surrounding you.
Yeah, totally. What about you, Ann?
Well, again, I certainly agree with Jerry, and I kind of got into bicycling just because it sounded fun. If you look at, for instance, Portland Wheelman's bike ride schedule, the rides are described, and they're really inviting, and they really sound like a lot of fun. And some of them are beyond my ability to do. They're a little too challenging, too many hard hills and that sort of thing. But that back in 1992, my husband and I and a friend were looking at these ride descriptions and thought, boy, that sounds like fun. And we would, our work week would be centered on what we were going to be doing the next weekend and what rides we would be doing. And it's just kept on from there. And I'm subsequently a ride leader for the club. And one of the rides groups that I do is two rides a month called Meet PWTC or Back in the Saddle Again. So those are kind of for somewhat older people that maybe used to ride a bike, but family responsibilities or maybe an injury or whatever, they got off the bike and want to get back on it. And I offer these rides through the club that are shorter group rides and really trying to get you back into it and figure out, what can my body do at this point? What about this bicycle I have? Is it going to do the job for me? Kind of get centered again on cycling.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. I'd like to hear from Brian too. Why do you ride? What you said, it's become a spiritual thing, but it seems like you might have some other things too.
Well, primarily, this is Brian. Primarily, I got into cycling because I needed to have some regular exercise. But I ride because I love it. So it's the joy of being on my cycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's often I just go off on my cycle and I don't even know where I'm going. I'm just going to, I want to get in about maybe 12, 15 miles, and I just kind of discover where I'm going as I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's much less stressful than being in a car, although I have been hit once on my cycle by a car. I guess almost every cyclist has experience with being hit. In fact, mine was just last year for the first time. Actually, I'm still recovering from it. But it's really, I just love it because it kind of gives me the sense of youth again. It doesn't have anything to do with speed. It just means being out, moving my body in the fresh air and being able to see nature. And so it's not an exercise that I dread. It's a kind of an exercise. It's a love. And it just happens to be good for my mind and my body.
And when you went on your, can you tell us about the book tour you did, the book itself, and also did you rode parts of the trip? Or?
Yeah, I published a book, my autobiography, in 2011, and I decided the first part of my book talk was going to be on my cycle, so I cycled from Portland to San Francisco. And every 40 to 50 miles, I had a book talk. usually, I would arrange to have the books shipped in advance to these locations. I wasn't going to carry that. I carried my one reader book. And that was a great experience. I had another cyclist that agreed to go with me to carry our gear. So there were the two of us. And he's an avid cyclist here in Portland. It was more or less, because my book is very political, it's about my Vietnam experiences and everything that I've been doing, going around the world, talking about U.S. foreign policy and how lawless it is. But part of my book is also talking about the serious problems of the American way of life. And so my cycling was partly trying to walk my talk and not using a lot of fossil fuels to promote my book. So that was kind of part of why I did it, was just to say, look, I'm trying to reduce my carbon footprint and I'm doing it by cycling, which I happen to like, but also it's a very practical form of transportation. So to me, it's not just recreation, but it's actually a policy of moving myself from point A to point B with a purpose. I don't always do that because I sometimes just, as I said, cycle off for the joy of it. But it's also a very good replacement for a car. and therefore I try to be out on the road every day, and I'm hoping to get back on the road every day very soon.
And for those who confuse S. Brian Wilson with the Beach Boys, could you, if it's okay with you, could you maybe, I mean, I've read your book, but could you maybe share a little bit about your life, some of that autobiography?
Well,
we only have 5 hours.
Not really on the bike show. I mean, you know, okay. I was a very straight kid coming out of rural America, and I went to graduate school, which was very unusual for my little rural town that there was even anybody in my town that went to graduate school. And I was drafted out of graduate school and wound up going to Vietnam. And while I was in Vietnam, I had a very intense experience witnessing atrocities, which completely changed my whole outlook on life, and came back with a whole new heart and eyes, and it led me to actually giving up my law career. I was going to be a lawyer, and I was so alienated from my experience that I know this sounds funny, but when you're a lawyer and want to be in the courtroom, you have to follow the protocol of the court, which includes standing up for the judge when the judge enters the courtroom. And I found that I could not do that. I could no longer obey authority automatically, and I didn't know that was going to happen. Well, that changed another big change, and so I just became a political activist. And I spent really from the early 70s to today as a political activist, and that has included traveling on an airplane, when I was traveling on airplanes, about 25 countries, learning the effects of U.S. policy on the cultures and the villages, and then coming back and trying to educate the public about what we really do and what our way of life, our way of life costs, what is the real cost of our way of life. And I tried to capture that in my book, which is called Blood on the Tracks, The Life and Times of S. Brian Wilson. That has included the water fasts I've done. I've been a tax refuser since 1983, meaning I have not been able to, I've had to work with no self-employed, with no withholding, or just living off the shelf completely. And I have, I lost my legs in a political action in 1987 trying to block a munitions train that was carrying munitions to El Salvador and Nicaragua. That was completely unexpected, because the deal was I was going to be arrested and go to prison for a year, and that didn't happen. And so it was a new experience to be living without my legs. And as I said, I really started rowing on a rowing machine just to get exercise. But that just stimulated me all the more. So I continued to do my political work, and I kept going to Nicaragua and El Salvador, and I spent a lot of time with the Zapatistas in Chiapas, Mexico. And so I've learned a lot from other people. My first lesson was with Vietnamese villagers. I actually fell in love with the Vietnam culture, and that meant that I was no longer a loyal trooper, which I wasn't expecting that to happen. But at any rate, it was a blessing in a way, because it broke my addiction to the American way of life and the ideology I grew up with, which I discovered was just a lot of BS. And so it helped me shape a new life. And I don't know, I can't capture my life very, very well in a bike show.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but we are more than cyclists. You know, every one of us has a really interesting and important history. And I'm always interested in other people's views and how they came to believe, you know, what they believe.
Might I just add that I did learn in Vietnam and after in my study of history that the bicycle was a very significant piece of the Vietnamese resistance mm-hmm. to our invasion and occupation, our U.S. invasion and occupation, because they brought lots of supplies from the north to the south on the Ho Chi Minh Trail mm-hmm. on bicycles at night as well as in the daytime. They had to go slower at night, but it was very significant, and it was not visible to B-52 bombers, although there were plenty that were killed. But it was a very significant instrument in the Vietnamese strategies to deal with the B-52s, is getting the supplies down the trail to the south where we were, occupying. And as I discovered when I was in Vietnam, we were the invaders and the occupiers. And that was quite an awakening to realize that I was on the wrong side.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think there's a long history with the bicycle as a tool being used in activist movements. Say, the Dutch resistance to the Nazis that Pete Jordan talks about in his book, In the City of Bikes, that was a great story. Also, to the women's liberation movement in the United States, bicycles were a huge piece of that as well. That's pretty fascinating. I want to talk to Anne a little bit about Psychology Today, the cable access show that you do.
Yes.
We know that you're president, or you were the former president of the Portland Wheelmen. But tell us a little bit about how that and your history has informed this cable access show, maybe what you guys cover, what your vision is for the show, and really what that's come to be.
Sure. I'm a friend of Bruce Buffington, who is the president of Northwest Bicycle Safety Council, and it mostly operates in Washington County, and they do a lot of safety fairs in the schools and put helmets on kids' heads. So teaching children how to ride safely and to know the laws and making sure that they have helmets on their heads. So part of Northwest Bicycle Safety Council is producing the TV show through Tualatin Valley Community Television called Psychology Today, and it's a monthly show, and it's the second Tuesday of every month, and it airs live at 6, and then there's a lot of reruns, and of course it's
6 a.m. or p.m.
I'm sorry, 6 p.m.
Got it.
and then there's a lot of reruns, and it is available online too. And initially Bruce was the host. He had me on as a guest, and then he invited me to be the co-host, and then he wanted to back off from being host, and so I'm the host of the TV show. And so, not unlike you, looking for people who bicycle and what they might bring to other people to encourage them or show them possibilities. Last month, August, we had a panel of 4 women who have young children, and they bicycle. They bike by they commute by bike, and they take their children with them, and the decisions that they had to make when they were pregnant, for example, did they choose to ride or not to ride? All of the families have one car rather than two, which is, more standard, I think, in our society. So just interesting things like that, hopefully encouraging other women or fathers to maybe think about incorporating their children into their lives with bicycles. And my show this month, September, I have someone from Bikes for Humanity and also from Bike Clark County. So talking about agencies, nonprofits that try to help people, the idea that maybe if somebody had a bike, it would broaden their horizons as far as their ability to work, whereas if they are only limited to walking and maybe buses, they're limited to where they can go for work. So, I don't know, a lot of people in our community have wonderful ideas and are working really hard for safety in our community, for riding, and just implementing the bicycle in our world. So, I don't know, I'm always open to things for the show, and I certainly have a limited perspective sometimes and welcome other people's ideas.
For those of us joining us just now, we're here at the KBOO studio, the bike show, and our guests today are Anne Morrow, Jerry Smith, and S. Brian Wilson, and we'll take a short break. Okay, welcome back. This is a bike show on KBOO Radio. My name is Alon Rob. Our engineer is Tammy Dean, and my co-host is Christopher Delaney. Our guests are Jerry Smith, Ann Morrow, and S. Brian Wilson, talking about cycling past 50. Before we continue, just a few short news items from the world of cycling. These are mostly taken from a wonderful site called treehugger.com. The first one is about bike sharing programs, which have sprung up all over the world in recent years, hopefully in our city soon. And in Paris, they started Petit Vélib, a bike sharing program for kids. So various sizes are available, including bikes with training wheels. And the first stations are located near playgrounds. Also in France, a country where ridership is low compared with other Western European countries, a new experiment has begun in order to increase cycling. 20 companies and institutions with about 10,000 employees will be paying 25 euro cents, which is about 34 US cents per kilometer for people to ride to the workplace. And the French transport minister, answering some critics who said, why are you favoring cyclists, has said that mass transit as well as private cars are already being subsidized, directly or indirectly, and paying people to bike is actually a wonderful idea. In Germany, the government is busy trying to cut the use of greenhouse gases through massive investment in wind and solar energy, and also increasing its investment in bicycles, especially bike infrastructure. And now it wants to increase the use of cargo bikes. And they had a recent major conference in Hamburg attended by thousands of people. And all operations were through cargo bikes, catering, promotions, transportation from one building, one part of the city to another. And some private companies in Germany, including the multinational UPS, are also delivering packages with bikes. In the United States, a U.S. Department of Transportation and National Household Travel Survey revealed that the age group with the highest rate of bicycling is 18 to 24, but that people in the age group of 55 plus is the group that actually is increasing its rate fastest and gaining ground on the young. So as I'm getting older, this is great news also. And the biggest increase is actually in the 75 to 84 age group. Comparing 1995 and 2009, it shows that in 1995, 0.75% of people between 18 and 24 rode, and now it's increased to 1%. Cyclists over 55, the number has tripled, and among people 75 and over, it has increased sixfold. Texting and driving is something that if you cycle or walk, you probably spend half your life cursing drivers who are texting. Some of them almost kill me a few times. And in 2011, 1.3 million crashes involved cell phones. In Montreal, police recently began targeting people cycling and walking who were text messaging, although there's no law against this activity in Montreal. There is in Chicago, and probably we'll see it soon in other cities. And finally, Rob Greenfield has been an environmental activist for many years, riding across America, hoping to draw attention and find solutions to many problems. Last summer, he cycled 5,000 miles on a bamboo bicycle during his off-the-grid Across America bike tour. He biked from New York City to Boston using only water from leaking faucet. He called this tour Drip by Drip Tour to highlight water conservation. And he's currently cycling across America on a bamboo bicycle on a tour called the Good Fluence Tour, seeking to inspire Americans to boost the sustainability movement and drawing attention to food waste. According to his website, 1 in 7 Americans don't have the food they need, yet we are throwing away enough food to feed every hungry American 5 times over. His tour includes planting gardens, dumpster diving, getting food, sharing it. And his goal with his friend Michael Scali is to create 5 or more community gardens, plant millions of wildflowers, and plant thousands of fruit trees. So good luck with this mission. Back to the bike show. And Jerry, you've gone on rides all over the world. Can you tell us, please, about some of those rides?
Well, let me tell you about one that I did first in 1992. I've been to New Zealand on several different occasions biking. My first ride there was with 13 people. It was one that went, as I remember, to the South Island. There's 2 islands in New Zealand. We got to this bridge, which had been abandoned for some traffic, by motor traffic, but it was being used exclusively as bungee jumping fodder. And I said to myself, as I watched those characters jumping off of that bridge with this rubber band around their ankles, and I thought to myself, I'm a conservative businessman, I might add. You wouldn't get me up there to jump off that bridge, and I don't care what the amount of dollars are that you're going to offer. So you sit there, or I did, and watch one after another of these bungee jumpers heading down, and not one of them gets killed. All of them live through it. Then some of the 13 people in your bike group, they start jumping. So as you watch your friends jump, 2, then 3 of them, and then they come back up to the top of the bridge and they say, Jerry, aren't you going to do it? And it's great fun. You will really miss something special unless you jump. And the more I thought about it, I was age 60, and I said to myself, I'm not going to live forever. And why doesn't this conservative businessman just take a chance and get out there and do a jump? So out, they pack your ankles carefully and put the rubber band around there, and you shuffle carefully out to the board at the end, and you look down, or at least when I looked down, it looked like it would be at least a mile or two between the board and the river below. And some of the people that got on the board never did jump, and no one is encouraging them to jump. If you don't do it voluntarily, they're not coming to push you off the board, for example. So there I was in that moment of decision, and down I went. Got to the bottom, lived through it, and came back up. And there was only 4 in our group of 13 that didn't make the jump. And had you asked a good share of them, would they be willing to do that before they ever came to New Zealand, like me, they would have said no. Not only that, I came back on other trips. And one trip I made right soon afterwards, I jumped off of a higher bridge. And I might add this, that if you really are a thrill seeker and you go, I suppose, New Zealand or any place, but particularly New Zealand, and you can do it by helicopter. In other words, rather than just, say, a couple hundred feet down off a bridge, they take you up maybe to 1,000 feet, and you jump out of the helicopter, and I suppose you just wish like hell that helicopter stays up there long enough to for you, when you reach the end of your rubber band, it's there to lift you up again, and you bounce back and forth and carefully put you on the ground. So haven't done the helicopter thing, probably won't, but it was exciting and interesting to do that one jump that I first started, and then the second one that came after that.
And what is cycling like when you're not jumping off bridges? What is cycling like in New Zealand?
The people in New Zealand are very conscious of the bikes that are on the road. It's, I think, one of the friendliest countries I've ever ridden in. Ireland would be the other one. There's a feeling of camaraderie that you get. You don't even have to do a tour such as I did. You could just be riding in New Zealand and feel comfortable because you'll pick up somebody else that's going in the same direction. So I look at New Zealand and Ireland as great. Some of the other things that I've done in other countries, like in France, if you don't speak the language, and I don't speak French, it's hard to know how you're being received. And so I've never felt with the French or the Greeks that there was any problem. But I must say that if you don't really communicate with them, you can't, then it's hard to really determine just how friendly they are. But I think most places I've gone have been extremely interesting, and Cuba would be another example of that. But I'll stop there at that point.
Well, one thing I want to ask you about, you mentioned off air that you do a lot of rides with your daughter. And I know Anne had talked about this earlier, biking with a family, encouraging parents to bike with their kids. I have two little girls myself, and so that's a really important topic to me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tell us a little bit about riding with your daughter. When did you guys start? What kind of rides has she been on with you? Where
yes.
You guys have traveled and done some tours together. What is that like?
We really have, and it's been great sport. I love biking with her. We've done four trips in, or five, I can't remember, a bunch of trips in Vermont. She lives in Princeton and with her husband, Craig, and the father, Craig's father, lives in Connecticut. And the four of us have gone on these bike trips in Vermont.
Wow.
And it's just great as a family endeavor. It's some of my favorite biking is with them. Also, I have a grandson who lives right here. And he and I just did a ride that is far greater than anything he has ever done before. We went up to, on the Clackamas River, to the Ripplebrook Ranger Station, a total of 48 miles, and he'd never done anything like that before. So I have the fun of watching him do something very special and being proud of it. And, of course, Granddad's proud of him.
That's awesome. Thank you.
And Brian, did you ride in Nicaragua or Vietnam?
No, I did not do any riding outside the United States. And in Vietnam, I was just engrossed in trying to survive, actually. I was actually the night security commander of an air base. And so we were dodging mortars and rockets. And I didn't even think about cycling, but I did learn about the Vietnamese culture and how much cycling was important to them. And I never did cycle in Nicaragua, which is not particularly a bicycle-friendly place, although I guess Ometepe Island, which is part of Nicaragua, is pretty good, I've heard, for cycling. But and I have wanted to go to Cuba to cycle. I've been to Cuba twice, but not with a cycle. And I was thinking, my partner and I were thinking of going to Cuba on a cycling vacation. We haven't done that yet. Now, with my shoulder, I'm reviewing everything about what I can and can't do. But we love Cuba. And but no, my cycling has been limited to the United States, New England, and the West Coast. And my partner and I did cycle from Eugene to Seattle a few years ago with about 10 other people. That was a group ride, and that was fun. We went to the Veterans for Peace Convention in Seattle in 2006, and that was 12 vets that were on that route, plus my partner. I would love, though, to get a folding cycle or something that I can get on that can easily, for me, that can get on a, if I ever fly again, get on an airplane. But I can't get it on Amtrak either. So far, I haven't been able to figure that out without huge expense of boxing something up that's not a bicycle.
Hopefully that'll be changing soon. I know Amtrak is very aware of that. But
I've talked to them a lot.
Well, and that's the thing that's come up in the bike community, the cycling culture here in Portland. We want to travel, and we want to do it in ways that are low impact. We don't want to fly. That's been something that's, you know, you've seen with Ellie Blue and Joe Beal and their Dinner on Bikes tour. They've been using Amtrak and getting on with their bikes, and they've brought a little bit of publicity to that concern. But hopefully it is easier, because the idea, if we want folks to ride their bikes and we want it to be more ubiquitous than it is to drive, per se, you know, you need to make it easy for folks.
Right.
And especially, you know, for the aging population, you don't want people to have to carry 20, 30 pounds and box it and unbox it, and it becomes quite a hassle. We love for it to be easier for, you know, the 8 to 80 idea. An 8-year-old kid could take his bike on the train, or someone who's 80 could take their bike on the train and make it just as easy.
Well, my partner and I just finished a 5,500-mile Amtrak ride. We would have loved to have had cycles that we could have gotten off at many places, but I haven't found a cycle that I could use that would Amtrak would accept.
Sure.
So, but it would have been great, because we were also in Vermont and Western Mass as part of our recent trip, and also we were in Nicaragua, but we had thought, boy, wouldn't it be great if we had our cycles on the Amtrak, and when we would make these stops, we'd just go cycle off for a few days.
Let's take a minute and ask, what advice would you have for someone who's older, deciding to get on the bike, possibly for the first time in a long time? How can we increase ridership for people that are over 50, and what resources are out there for folks? And that's for anybody. Maybe Ann, you could address that.
Well, I think one piece of advice was, if you have a bike, maybe you've got an old 10-speed or something like that, right off the bat, I would try to attempt to make that work for you. I would wait and see what's going to work for you, what physical issues might you have, that sort of thing, and kind of play with it a little bit first before you go plunging a bunch of money into, you know, something. A lot of people tend to buy a mountain bike or something, seeing those big tires and thinking that's going to be real stable for them. And then, lo and behold, that really wasn't quite the right bike for them to buy. That's not really what they're interested in. So I would not spend a lot of money until you tried something first. That would be my first piece of advice.
What about you, Jerry? Do you have any ideas?
Well, I think that too often people are greatly concerned about getting more than half a mile away from their house for fear they're going to have a flat tire. They may be riding, they don't have anybody to ride with. So I think when people get started, it's well if they can do so with a partner. And Anne was talking about some of the rides she has done. And I might mention that I'm not sure she made it specific. Some of the rides for new people in our club are group rides. So no one is left behind. If you have a flat tire, and you don't know how to fix a flat tire, no problem. There's going to be somebody in the group that knows how to do that, and you can watch them do it, and everybody takes off again after it's done. So I think that getting started in biking is a function of not only desire, but the relaxation of fear, because some people just fear doing anything where they might be out there alone. But our club, and we're not the only club in town, offers just the kinds of things that make it easier for that to happen.
This is Brian. I agree with that. Having some, at least one, if not more, people to venture out. If you're just starting in cycling at 60 or 65, to have somebody else with you. And also, from going to Coventry, which is the recumbent bike shop in town, I can tell you that with all these baby boomers, they are now looking for something a little more stable than a bicycle. So there's a lot of three-wheeled recumbents that people are coming in to check out at Coventry, which is, you know, the recumbent shop in town. And I think that helps people feel a little more secure. They're not going to fall. But I think the social part of having somebody else to go with you is important. And feeling, if you can't figure out safely on a bicycle, there is the recumbent tricycles, which are much stabler and more comfortable, actually, than a bicycle. There's, you don't maybe go quite as fast, but I really would encourage everybody that can to figure out a way to cycle, to get exercise and enjoy your later years, because cycling is such a joyful expression.
We have a couple of minutes. Maybe Jerry, end with you a question about Cuba, perhaps. It's a country that mm-hmm. always interested me. What did you find in Cuba? What were your experiences riding in Cuba?
It was one of the most interesting places I've ever been. Anybody that's biking in Cuba, be sure you don't get a biking tour that's into the hinterland someplace. Havana is where you want to be. That's where the action is. When I first arrived in Havana, maybe 20 of us had a Cuban bike leader, and we stood in Revolutionary Square, and he said, "This is where Castro gives his May Day speech." And this is Fidel Castro, and this goes back 15 years ago, before Raul really was much in the picture. And anyway, so I said to him, does he say the same thing every year? And he looked around very carefully to make sure he wasn't overheard, and he says, "Same old stuff." So I said to him, "Well, why do you come back year after year?" Again, he looked around, make sure no one heard him. "I don't have a choice. I've got to be here. Either you're in the sugarcane fields or some very important industry, or you're right here listening to Fidel Castro." And I might mention one other thing that that's interesting. I was riding along, and this gentleman was right ahead of us, and he had a pig, a little piglet, about, I'd say 20 inches, bungee strapped to the back of his bike. And I looked at that, and I wondered, what is going on? This is Christmas Eve day, I might add. And as he rode along, I asked the leader of our group, "Where is he going with that pig?" He says, "The Cubans don't look at Christmas Day as being a particularly important time, but Christmas Eve night is the big dinner. And what you're looking at is the dinner for that man and his family for Christmas Eve night," which was coming up just a few hours later. And he was probably a wealthy Cuban, because only the people who've got our high-income people in Cuba are able to even find a bike and ride it.
Actually, when I was there in 1991, when they were in the peak of the hard time after they'd lost their oil, they were bringing in their first shipload of bicycles from China. Now Cuba has two bicycle factories themselves, so there's a lot of bicycling going on now compared to 1991.
We could talk about Cuba probably for a couple of hours, as long as those speeches of Fidel Castro about, and I know there are a lot of different opinions about Cuba, life for the Cubans and so forth, but our time is up. This has been the Bike Show here on KBOO Portland. We have been on the air every month for the past decade and hope to see you again next month, October 1st, the first Wednesday of the month. We would like to thank our guests for a wonderful show, Anne Morrow, Jerry Smith, and S. Brian Wilson. So happy and safe cycling to all of you.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW, and also by Northwest Connector, connecting riders to the Oregon coast through daily round-trip bus routes from Portland, Salem, and Corvallis. Northwest Connector buses are equipped with bike racks and offer 3-day and 7-day passes with transfers up and down the coast. Schedules and trip planner at nwconnector.net. And with that, we're going to bring to a close Public Affairs morning programming for today. It's Wednesday, September 3rd. We do have a special community announcement for you, and that is that tomorrow, that's Thursday evening, you can celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act at the Keene Garage. That's the 50th anniversary of the Wilderness Act. There will be Oregon wilderness photography curated by the Sierra Club High Desert Committee, and you can chat with people from Oregon Wild and Oregon Natural about wilderness successes in Oregon and about important projects in the future. And guess what? There will be free beer and free snacks. That's this Thursday evening, September 4th, from 7 p.m. to 7... No, sorry. Start over. Thursday evening, September 4th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Keene Garage. That's at 505 Northwest 13th. Thanks for that. And we're going to go to the KBOO Noon News headlines momentarily, but stay tuned, because coming up after that is Jazz Lives with Nick Geffro. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO this morning.